Welcome to Real Truth for Today with Pastor Jeff Shreve, Senior Pastor of First Baptist Church in Texarkana, Texas. Now, here's Pastor Jeff.
Well, good morning and welcome to Real Truth for Today. Pastor Jeff Shreve here. Hope you're having a great morning. John 7:24, Jesus said this, "Do not judge according to appearance, but judge with righteous judgment." We all know about January 6, 2021, the Trump rally that turned into a disaster as the Capitol was breached and Trump supporters were beaten and they were arrested. And there was that ugly altercation with Capitol Police, and many were, 1,500 or so, were put behind bars as a result of that. And one of those men who was found guilty is Marine and service retired New York City police officer Tom Webster. No criminal record, but he was there on January 6th and he had an altercation with a police officer and was sticking up for people who were being abused in his opinion and others' opinions by the police, and the police were being very aggressive. Anyway, one thing led to another and there was an altercation. And Tom Webster was arrested, he was tried, he was found guilty, and he was given a 10-year prison sentence because of what happened on January 6th. So, Tom, we welcome you to Real Truth for Today.
Thank you, Pastor Jeff. I really appreciate this time to get my message out, and what really happened that day also is important. Thank you.
You're very welcome. And Tom, just tell us a little bit about yourself. You served in the Marines, and you served as a police officer for 20 years until you retired. You're a husband, you're a father. You've never been involved in criminal activity. You've been involved in protecting our country and standing up for law and order.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, I was originally born in Brooklyn, New York, and moved upstate and into the Rockland County area. And soon after graduating high school, I joined the United States Marine Corps and served honorably in the 1st Battalion, 6th Marines as a rifleman. And it was a tough experience, but I really feel like it just, you know, laid down the groundwork for my experiences later in life in a lot of ways. Soon after leaving the Marine Corps, I signed up and served 20 years, served the people of New York City for 20 years, served honorably, and worked in the streets in the Bronx and in a housing department in the projects for a good portion of that career, and as a police academy instructor, ending in the last 4 years of my career as a uniform protection detail in the intel division. With Mayor Bloomberg's security detail.
And so, when did you retire from the police force? What year?
It was 2011.
Okay.
And then, yeah.
Had you been working or just retired?
Oh yes. I mean, even the last few years that I was on the job down in the city, I really just wanted to switch gears completely. I mean, there was plenty of opportunity for me to continue doing, you know, security work and protection work. There's so much work in the city area to do that, but it just was going to continue to take time with my family, working late nights, the overnight shifts, and traveling a little bit. So I really just switched gears completely and started up a real small, like, lawn care landscaping business. And that gave me that flexibility to be around the kids and the family. And I have a wonderful wife and three beautiful kids, and so it worked out pretty good.
Well, so Tom, how did you end up in D.C. on January 6, 2021?
Wow, I always tell the story. It was really, really cut and dry. If I'm not one for going to protests, rallies, or anything like that, that's time away from my family. At that point it was winter time. So I had, agreement to do snow removal for my accounts in the winter time. And I said to myself, if it doesn't snow, that would determine whether or not, I would consider going. And of course, in that general area of where I was living, it wasn't snowing. But I want to get back to, I'll say this. If President Trump doesn't use the word, you know, we need patriots down in D.C., I definitely would not have gone. But him using that word was like, that's exactly who I am. I love this country. I'm a God-fearing Christian. And I stand up for three things: God, family, and country. And I am a patriot. And like many others there that day, we all are.
So, Tom, from your perspective, because as I've read the stories and things, Trump had his rally, and then the mob or the massive people then went to the Capitol, where it was barricaded off. And how did things turn so chaotic and violent?
Yeah, I mean, back at the Ellipse, I stayed for the entire speech back at the Ellipse. And I remember saying to myself, it would seem like it was a very, I watched, you know, President Trump's rallies on TV, and it really didn't have that same effect on the crowd. It was more of like a safe, like almost a political speech, a speech that a politician, a career politician might make. And there was a little bit of disappointment in the crowd, so to speak, and, you know, that in that way. Still wasn't any rush to get down there. I walked down there, and then everybody talks about this one distinct moment where down in the street, I observed over to my left as I'm looking up at the Capitol on the northern side, these two uniform officers up on the mezzanine level, like just walk out and like launch like into the crowd these flashbangs. One right after the other. And I was just shocked that they would just drop that on the heads of protesters right below them. I thought that was a little, you know, not within their training parameters at the very least. And I thought it was wrong right off the bat. Mm-hmm. So that was really a determining factor for me to, you know, go over to where the West Terrace was, where, you know, I was told, again, we had permits to be on the grounds to continue listening to other speeches. Mm-hmm. And I felt like, well, I just going to stand outside and see what's going on. And I'm sure there's some other speeches going on somewhere. That's what everybody was talking about on the bottom with at the street level.
Yeah. From your perspective, Tom, do you think there were, FBI or CIA or whoever, government people in the crowd trying to stir people up?
Well, I can tell you this, sir, walking down, the avenue, I don't know which avenue I was on, but walking down towards the Capitol, I saw some suspicious vehicles parked on some side streets with blacked out, tinted out windows on the bus. You couldn't see who was driving or operating that vehicle, whether they were in uniform or whatever. I initially thought, you know, that's the protocols that I would be familiar with, that would be like a prisoner bus to transport, you know, possible prisoners maybe or something like that. But it just didn't appear that way. It had no markings of, you know, what it indicating what department it was from, or it was a very, you know, and it was being escorted by another vehicle that had like, blacked out, tinted out windows. Mm-hmm. I thought that was kind of odd, you know? Right. And as the emotions were so high, as the day progressed, but once things got settled down a little bit, yeah, you were able to pick them out, pretty easily. In fact, walking away from the Capitol around maybe 4:30 or so, I you know, kindly confronted two that I felt were feds, and one was limping, and the other one was holding the person, the other person, they were a pair. One was holding one of them over his shoulder because the one fellow must have been, I don't know, shot in the leg with a wooden less than lethal round or a rubber bullet. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously in some type of pain. And I said to him, he's like, you know, I said, you guys totally set us up today, you know, and that was wrong. And I basically accused them of being part of the entrapment operation.
Right.
And these guys said nothing to me. They didn't challenge me. They didn't deny it, which I think would be odd if somebody confronted me and said, hey, you're part of this whole operation. I would,
right,
wouldn't necessarily just let them say that, you know. So I thought, right, that was, yeah.
Tom,
but like
from
said,
your,
what's the emotion? Go ahead.
From your perspective, do you think the crowd was peaceful and then got agitated as they were provoked, or did they start getting aggressive and then the Capitol Police responded to the aggression?
Well, I just think in general, it was the absolutely worst possible crowd control operation conducted by any type of law enforcement ever. I mean, there were no announcements to the public. Nobody was stopping the crowds down the street or coming down the avenues or making any announcements. I know for a fact that that Capitol building has a PA system that would rival any rock concert or any rap concert. It would be undeniably audible, and they could have very easily made some announcements. No announcements were made, and no signs were posted. And the first possible police barrier that I encountered, or any police officer, was all the way up on that Lower West Terrace. And I felt that I had a constitutional right to be on the grounds where we were told to go and listen to other speeches. Mm-hmm. And I think it's like just like a, you know, again, you know, we've all seen the protests. You can go as far as the police will let you. If they don't tell you to turn around, if we don't make any announcements, then you're good, you know?
Well, I know that we all know that Donald Trump pardoned all the J6ers on Inauguration Day on January 20th. And it was roughly 1,500 people. And you were kind of singled out, Tom, because I guess because of your background and because they said that you were one of the violent aggressors.
Oh, boy.
They like to talk about that. Mm-hmm. I saw something on social media. It says Thomas Webster was convicted of 6 counts, including assaulting an officer using a dangerous weapon. That was your flagpole. He challenged police barricades. He was screaming. He wheeled a flagpole and gouged a police officer's eyes, and Trump pardoned him. And so they kind of use you as the whipping boy. You're this terrible person that was going after police. You never entered the Capitol. Go ahead.
You're absolutely right, Pastor. But you want to know something? I was indicted on entering the Capitol. That's how loosely they threw away they put together these arrests and these complaints and these indictments. I was indicted. They indicted me for going inside the Capitol, and I never, maybe 20 feet from the entrance of a Capitol, as close as I ever got. I understand what the narrative is with my case. And that's the part that is really breaking me up. And, you know, when you look through that narrow lens of that body-worn camera, and that's all that you're seeing, they can control that narrative.
Right.
But when they back up and you use that security camera from the Capitol, which is a bird's eye view of everything happening, it's a totally different storyline or, you know, factual event that you can see happening. And
I saw that, Thomas, as you shared it with me, and you clearly were hit in the face before you did anything.
Yeah,
but that wasn't allowed to be submitted into court, correct?
Well, we got it. Like here's the heartbreaking part of the whole thing. You know, you have these status hearings, and you have all these, pre-trial hearings that you go through, and you had like one a month leading up to the trial, which was like a year after I turned myself in and was processed on the arrest and those charges. But the Judge Mehta, on these status hearings, he kept on asking the prosecution, Mr. Webster's making a complaint or making a statement that he was provoked and he was punched in the face. And I'll never forget it. I can't let this down with the prosecution team. Judge Mehta said, is there any evidence of this man getting punched in the face? And every status hearing, the government would say, no. Now that footage, that video that I'm showing, that's from a known position. That's from a security camera viewpoint. That's not from somebody's cell phone that just happened to randomly find. They had it all along and they hid it. They hit it because the strategy was to get this case to trial if we were going to go to that point, and let the jury, who I think was extremely biased, and I can understand why, but that was the strategy. They had that video all along, and they could have said, yeah, well, yeah, he was kind of punched, and yeah, there was some evidence of, you know, hand gesture. I mean, to use the officer's own testimony, he said it would be insightful to give hand gestures.
Yeah, they sure didn't want that. Well, you're listening to Real Truth for Today. Pastor Jeff Shreve here talking to recently pardoned J6er Tom Webster. Don't go away.
This is Real Truth for Today. Podcasts of the program are available on the podcast page at afr.net. Now, back to Pastor Jeff Shreve.
Welcome back to Real Truth for Today. Pastor Jeff Shreve here. We're talking to Tom Webster. Tom Webster is a Marine and a retired New York City police officer. He was caught up in the January 6th protest on the Capitol grounds, and he was arrested. He was tried and convicted of a crime of 6 counts, including assaulting an officer with a dangerous weapon, and was sentenced to 10 years in prison. When Donald Trump took office on January 20th, one of the first things that he did before the end of that day was pardon all those who were convicted of crimes on January 6th, roughly 1,500 people. And some people were up in arms that those who they said were violent toward police officers, Tom Webster being one of those, that he should not have been pardoned. Tom never went into the Capitol building, although they accused him of doing that. But his altercation was with a police officer who, from the footage that wasn't allowed to really get into court, showed that the officer hit him in the face before Tom retaliated. Tom, as you think back on that day, obviously you'd say, I wish I had never gone there because it did affect your life so much. But how, looking back on it, and I know when you're caught up in the moment and you're seeing things happen and people getting accosted as they were and the rubber bullets and all, how could you have handled that in a way that wouldn't have escalated so fiercely?
It goes back. You have to really question whether or not you believe in the Constitution or not. Do you have a God-given right to petition your government and to stand outside your capital of the building of your country and just petition your government without being assaulted by police? And sir, I witnessed an elderly couple, a woman with blood. You couldn't tell what color her face was. Her entire face was covered with red blood dripping all over the place, and they were both in tears. And they were pretty far away from where the police line was. And you can look in that body cam footage. I said, there's something just not right here. And I just felt like I wanted to go up and just take a look to see what was going on. I testified to this. I was like, maybe there's something I'm missing, but I don't see any police around here from the lower level. And my point was to try to see if they were trying to move the crowd or they established the police line. And if you look at that body cam footage, I stand on my tippy toes and I verify that there's a police barricade there all around the bottom part of that lower West Terrace. And I said, this is the forward edge that we're allowed to go. Why are protesters being attacked with flashbangs and rubber bullets when they're standing 20 feet away from the police line? And all I was going to do, I had in my mind, I'm just going to give this group of officers here a piece of my mind. They're mishandling the whole crowd control operation here. And I very quickly was encountered by an officer who gave me a hand gesture. He said, hey, come on, let's go. Okay. And you can see in the video, he identifies me as a United States Marine by looking not at the pole, but at the symbol that I'm carrying. And his reaction is a physical one. He reaches over the bike rack. I'm standing about a foot and a half to 2 feet away from the bike rack. He reaches over and pushes me in the chest and makes, basically, I thought that was wrong. Mm-hmm. That was my plan. And to just voice my opinion. And when it got physical, we'll never be able to duplicate the emotion of that day again.
Sure.
10 years from now, if we had a similar situation where somebody was, hey, this, the election was stolen and this and that, no one's going to go down there, no one in the right mind would go down there. But that time, you can't talk about January 6th without talking about COVID and all the damage that the government did by locking these kids up, not letting them go to school. And you can't, it's just so much more to talk about other than just January 6th. And
right.
And having that emotion on that day where we're being told that, possibly, a compromised asset of another country that's going to be sworn into this office. I mean, that was pretty scary. you know.
Okay, Tom, let me ask you this. As a police officer, if you were doing crowd control and you initiated something with a protester, you punched him.
Right.
If he came back at you, is that still a crime on him because he's attacking a police officer? How does that work? If you initiate it and he finishes it, and decks you or whatever, is he still going to be arrested?
I see what you're saying. Well, I don't think there's so many things that happened that day that officers throughout the whole country would never consider doing. Shooting an unarmed woman in the head for trespassing and killing her, pushing young kids off of ledges, just, you know, and they're not even any, it's just going up to like the mezzanine level instead of pulling them over, arresting them and processing them. They're pushing kids back off a ledge that's three stories up in the air. Mm-hmm. I mean, you try that on any other job throughout the country, you're going to jail, you know, strike a woman in the head 32 times, put your nightstick away, and then punch that woman in the face. And all she is doing is she has her hands up in the air. You're going to jail. But in D.C., if you're going after a Trump supporter, you get a promotion and you get a pay raise and an award to put on your chest.
So let me ask you this, Tom. So the officer hits you in the face and then you engage him aggressively in response, and that's understandable. They said that you used your flagpole, your Marine flag on a pole. You used that as a deadly weapon. Is that what they were trying to make the case?
Yeah. I mean, again, you can't talk about one without the other. You have to talk about the hand gesturing. You have to talk about the shove and the come on gesturing that I witnessed. And then what happened to me was a pretty hard punch, and you could see by that video, and I've had conversations with people who boxed, you can tell by my action of that flagpole that I'm basically collapsing at that point. I'm shutting down for a moment, and that flagpole is just falling, and I stumble, and I said, whoa, I thought it was a nightstick. That's how hard of a punch it was. I just recovered. I said, okay, you know, I'm thinking he's coming after me again. I'm still seeing stars. And I made it a point to never hit him or anyone else. And I never struck him with that. And ironically enough, sir, an element to my conviction was that the jury had to find that I actually made contact with that flagpole with the officer. And I made it, you know, I played lacrosse, I played hockey, I played a lot of other sports. And, you know, it wasn't like it was an accident that I didn't hit him. You know, I wouldn't have done that, you know, and, but what he did to me was completely wrong. It gets back to what we talked about. The other question was, you know, it's amazing how, time can slow down in an emotional moment like that.
Right.
And what went through my mind was, as a police officer, I have a spotless record. You know, I went to some good units because of that, and I got recognized because of that. I never once initiated any contact with any individual by striking them in the face. You know, that's just, to me, that's just wrong. You know, you wrestle somebody down, even if they're resisting, you know, try to get them down to the ground. It's more of a wrestling match, but you just walk up and bam, punch somebody in the face. And
right.
Especially after waving them over, you know, I mean, that's like barroom stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and
Tom,
you know,
let me ask you this, because it seems like a law enforcement officer is going to naturally gravitate toward Trump, who's more law and order than the Democrats, who are, you know, letting the BLM rioters burn down cities and that kind of thing. Seems odd that you would have these Capitol policemen that would be so aggressive toward people that they would normally support. What do you make of that?
We've heard that a lot throughout the crowd. I was like, we're your biggest supporters. What are you doing attacking us? You know, gassing us. And that wasn't your typical type of tear gas. That was some type of chemical agent that interacted with your cardio system, because people were just dropping on the ground. I haven't seen the footage yet, but of people huddled around a hole in the stage on that Lower West Terrace. I made it into that little hole to get to the pure oxygen that was underneath there. And, you know, if it wasn't for that, I think there'd be some more people, you know, that might have not made it. You know, factually speaking, you know, the majority of the American people think that there was only one protester that died that day or was murdered that day, but there was actually four. You know, and the majority of the American people don't know that. You know, Roseanne Boylan just beaten. I mean, to strike a woman that's unconscious while she's unconscious on the ground with a stick, I mean, that just breaks me up to hear that.
You well, know? they try and paint you guys as killing police officers. I've heard that from Kamala Harris said that and some others.
Yeah,
That's just not true. Now, one officer did die from a heart attack. Is that right?
I believe it was, I'm not 100% sure the officer's name. I don't want to repeat it. But apparently, you know, they said that originally they said he was murdered or killed by some type of fire extinguisher getting thrown at him. That was the initial narrative. And then they changed that narrative around once they found video to in opposition to that. And then they switched the narrative around. No, he died later that day. Well, they found video of that officer waving protesters inside the Capitol. And so they had to do away with that narrative. And they finally admitted that he passed away the following day. And like I said before, the chemicals that they were using that day was interacting with the protesters and officers' cardio system. It wasn't just like your typical tear gas where it would sting and irritate.
Yeah.
Just want to point that out.
Yeah. Okay. So Tom, when the police officer or the Capitol officer hits you in the face, you come at him, you wave the flag, you don't hit him, but it's aggressive right. toward him. And then, right. but then you guys, he's still behind the barricade at that time. When do you get on top of him? Cause I saw a picture of you ripping his mask off.
Okay. So now just like I explained to you before, my experience and the officer testified and the captain that was testifying that day, that police line is there to separate and indicate the outer, the perimeter or the limit that you can go to. And that works the same for the officers. In general speaking, you know, no uniform officer is ever going to go out into the crowd by himself. And maybe with an arrest team or maybe in support with some plainclothes teams that are on the other side, he might. But after the punch, and things start to really break apart at the police line all around that Lower West Terrace, the majority of the officers, and you can see in the video, they back up. I backed up, and the officer testified to that, and that's what he was trying to, he said he was trying to get me to back up. I did back up. But as he comes in to the protest area, the first thing that he does is unfurls another protester's flag, take a quick look at it to see if it's the Marine flag, and then he comes after me to take the pole from me. So I was saying to myself, okay, this guy, and I testify, is like a rogue type of cop. He's doing things differently than the other uniform officers that day. And again, going back to speaking about what we just talked about, the hand gesturing, the hand waving, and then the punch, he assaulted me. And to me, once I backed up, it should have been over, but he still came after me again. And with the crowd going forward, I felt the need to defend myself, and I did it in a way that I did not injure the officer. I didn't swing, I didn't kick, I didn't punch him, and just an instinctive, you know, again, like I told you, I played hockey. You know, in hockey, you see players, you know, maybe mashing their glove or their hand in you know, that kind of thing, and right. or a football player just pushing up on the face mask a little bit.
Right.
That's all I could really think of doing without hurting the cop, and you know, ironically enough, he made statements to the FBI and to his Metro detective that I was punching him about the face and body. And the level of perjured statements in this case are off the charts. It's like every statement or every interview is littered with false statements and just perjured testimony. And it's like really heartbreaking. You know,
Yeah. Okay. So Tom, when you you're pushing into his face, and then that was kind of the end of it, or where did it go from there?
what nobody talks about what the cop was doing while we're on, what he's doing to me while we're on the ground. And I was like, I'm just going to give you a little mush, you know, whatever, and push the face mask up. I mean, you waved me over twice. You pushed me, and then you punched me in the face. I'm not going to hurt you. I'm not going to hit you, right? But you gave me the green light, you know. And I want to just point this one thing out, sir. I'm not sure how many other J6 defendants received a self-defense instruction to the jury, but I had one. You know, if you read those jury instructions, you know, it was textbook. I really feel strongly in any other venue I would have been acquitted, because you did have evidence of that provocation and that strike to my face.
Tom, it seems like when I looked at it, it's like, okay, even if they said you were in the wrong, I mean, you get fined, you do 30 days in jail. I mean, if you compare that with the BLM rioters, who you got 10 years, they didn't get 10 minutes. They're burning down businesses.
Well, that opens up a whole nother can of worms, Pastor Jeff, and that's your federal justice system. When they want you, they're going to get you, and they're going to convict you on a narrative, not the truth. And when they convict you, they're going to sentence you to a level that's just unbelievable. You talk about white collar guys doing life sentences for just not reporting taxes. You know, vets, everybody. I mean, getting 25-year sentences at the age of 50, that's considered a life sentence.
Yeah.
It's heartbreaking what they do. They really, it's a little overkill. So,
sure.
That's just how the system works. I mean, they wanted to give me 20 years, the government.
You're listening to Real Truth for Today. Pastor Jeff Shreve here talking to Tom Webster. He was convicted on January 6th, and he was released last week. You've heard a lot about saving babies on this show. That's because it's important to me personally. And let me just be frank with you. We need to save them. That's why we've partnered with Preborn, the nation's leader in introducing mothers with unplanned pregnancies to their babies. And once she hears that heartbeat and sees that precious life growing inside of her, she is twice as likely to choose life. Now that's a miracle. But quite honestly, if we don't save them, who will? Preborn receives no government funding, so their work is completely dependent on you and me. Preborn has rescued over 280,000 babies. And that's not all. They provide love, support, and counseling for up to 2 years for free, saving lives and souls. One ultrasound is just $28, or 140 helps rescue 5 babies' lives. Abortion doesn't stop, so we can't either. Together, you and I can save lives. Just call #250 on your cell and say the keyword baby. That's 250 baby. Or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com.
If you'd like to contact Pastor Jeff, email PastorJeff@FromHisHeart.org. Now, back to Real Truth for Today with Pastor Jeff Shreve.
Welcome back to Real Truth for Today. Pastor Jeff Shreve here. Jesus said in John 7:24, "Do not judge according to appearance sake, but judge with righteous judgment." We've been talking to Tom Webster. Tom Webster, Marine and retired New York City police officer, 20 years with the force. He was there January 6th in Washington, D.C. at the Capitol, and he had an altercation with a police officer. And as we've been saying, he was provoked. The officer hit him in the face and gestured to him, and very unprofessional. Tom, who's had a lot of experience in crowd control in his 20 years as a police officer, very taken aback by how things were conducted there on the Capitol grounds. Never went into the Capitol, but he was arrested and he was tried. And in May of 2022, he was convicted of 6 counts, including assaulting an officer with a dangerous weapon. And he was given 10 years in prison, and he was sentenced in September of 2022. He was released as Donald Trump, on his first day in office, pardons 1,500 J6ers. So he was released that week, and he was incidentally in the federal prison unit here in Texarkana, Texas. And so you didn't get to see the best part of Texarkana, Tom. I'm sorry about that.
No, sir. You're right about that. It's a beautiful area of the country.
So you felt like you were tried and convicted on a narrative rather than on the actual merits of the case. It seems like that played out over and over and over again in these convictions. Sure. And they called this an insurrection and, Nancy Pelosi, the worst day in American history, that kind of, you know, rhetoric.
Sure.
It just seems like it was contrived. It was an entrapment. I saw the videos where they're letting people into the Capitol. It looks like it's a tour. That doesn't look like an insurrection to me. Now, after you had the confrontation with the officer and you're pushing his face, then finish out how that ended up.
Well, I just want to point out this one thing here. He wasn't laying down there like a baby seal. He was ramming that flagpole in my mouth like a horse bit. He was punching me in the face, which he denied on the stand, and there's video evidence of it. He actually loosened up my teeth on the side and busted up my lip on the inside pretty good. So it wasn't like he was just laying. And again, never hit him. It's just after that, he readjusted his mask, ran off into the police line with, with his fellow officers there. And here's the interesting thing. Never reported the incident. Went to the hospital later that night in relation to another incident with another protester, ironically enough, another Marine, and reported an injury to his hand, which involved some stitches. But he never said anything to a supervisor. He never. Now, here's another thing you can ask any police officer throughout the country. If you use any type of force, especially a punch to a person, the first thing you're going to do is document it and articulate and justify the reason why you use that force. And that's required with the DC Metro PD guys also, which this cop is. Never did one piece of paper. To this day, there is not one complaint or one report that is other than the interview with the detective 10 days later that's connected to my incident. In fact, the officer, when questioned by the detective, told the detective with the MPD, "I don't recall the incident." That's 10 days after January 6th.
Yeah.
You can ask any investigator out there that's law enforcement. If you're going to start off your investigation with your star witness saying, on the record saying, "I don't remember the incident," it's not a very strong case. That means there's something else going on there.
Right.
And ironically enough, my case went from active, classified as active, to suspend it immediately after that conversation.
So you just, after that was over, then things kind of broke up and then you just went home, right?
So I made my way back home and all of a sudden things just started kicking off on the social media stuff. But I kept on saying to myself, "All right, well, this officer's cool. He tells the truth what happened here. I think I'm good." But I started going, my family member called me up and said, "Hey, you're going viral on YouTube." And I got my own hashtag, the eye gouger. And they made claim that I was gouging this guy's eyes out and, never came close to doing that. So I retained a lawyer who I felt was a pretty good choice, but ended up not being, I think he's just too afraid of the system, to be honest with you, sir. And that's right. The problem you have, in the federal justice system. It's, everybody's worrying about, he's practicing in a different district and, there's so many things that, he promised me. He promised to bring up a document, and we all know you can't, you don't lie to the FBI and to the DOJ. And this guy, we have a document that wasn't submitted during the trial. And my lawyer promised me that he would read him, the officer, the Miranda rights before we talked about it. And he never, introduced it. So, and among other things, the video has been altered. It's been edited and, to hide the first hand gesture. And I invite anyone to look at that video. It's on Rumble, Thomas Webster acting in self-defense. Take a look at that first hand gesture and see it jump. It doesn't, his arm doesn't go all the way back and up in the air, like compared to the body cam footage.
Yeah. Okay. Let me ask you a kind of a weird question, Tom. So if the roles were reversed, if the officer were you and you were the officer, given what happened, what should have happened as far as consequences? Would there have been consequences for the officer if everything were judged correctly, or would there have been some kind of consequences for you?
I think I'm fortunate enough to have been, have been employed and served and trained with the most professional and best trained police force in the world. It comes from leadership and supervision, which was lacking that day, right from the very beginning. Their own upper staff admits to that. There's certain protocols and procedures that you just have to follow. Warnings over the PA system. Things just could have been done so much differently and so much better. You don't incite. Again, the officer, I have him on video using hand gesturing with other protesters, but I was prevented from showing those videos. You know how you make that Pac-Man sign with your fingers that you hold it up to the crowd that might be yelling at you? I wasn't allowed to show that. The whole cornerstone of my defense was provocation, hand gesturing, and a punch. And the jury felt like they didn't see any of that. It's just, as an officer, from my point of view, here's the part that really was upsetting to me. You as an officer, you look for cues in your surroundings, whether it's a family dispute, whether it's some type of incident, and you look for cues to de-escalate. You see pictures of the kids on the wall or something like that. You divert the attention to de-escalate. When he looks up at my flag, the symbol, not the pole, and his reaction is a physical one. I have to ask you, you don't see that on the body cam. That's my point. You don't see that on the body cam footage, but in a lot of ways that look and that physical confrontation is almost the same as the punch, because he's saying to me, I know you're a Marine and this is what I'm going to do to you. That's something that I would never consider doing. Next. I would communicate to the kid or the person and say, hey, you could just even make up a story. Hey, my dad's a Marine. My brother's a Marine. Feel you. Things are a little chaotic. Just work with me on this. And like I testified on the stand, the majority of the time, it's a 30-second soda bottle just fizzing out a little bit, and just let it calm down or help it calm down. But don't do things to escalate the situation.
Yeah. Well, he was obviously angry. Seems to me. Now, were most of those officers angry in that situation?
I think you're going to find a pattern. I can't speak about what more, detailed as far as what happened on that Lower West Terrace area. And any officer is going to tell you, if you have one guy that shows up and messes everything up sometimes, and throws a monkey wrench in a situation. I think the majority of the cops were somewhat professional. They were challenged by what they was confronted before them. But I think you're going to see a pattern of those, of the Metro PD guys that were there that were doing some, you look at Roseanne Boylan. I believe the officer was a Metro cop. You look at Victoria White, the one woman that got hit over the head with the nightstick 30 times. I believe he was a Metro supervisor, no less. Now, if you see your supervisor doing stuff like that, what message are you sending to your lower ranking officers?
Right.
It's, it's not a positive one.
Okay, so Tom, you get 10 years. You said they wanted 20, but it went down to 10. And that's 10 full years. That's no parole, or were you up for parole at some time in there?
Yeah, that's the irony of the whole thing. I was basically, they pushed that deadly weapon conviction for me because that would limit increase the amount of time that I would have to do. I wasn't eligible for certain things that would have helped me get out earlier. They call it FSA. Because I had that label of that flagpole being used as a deadly weapon, I was considered a danger to the public. And, that kind of hurt. And I flashed back to moments as an officer where literally would have been justified in using deadly force in a handful of times. One in particular where I ran in after a kid that I knew had a gun into the lobby out in East New York, Brooklyn. It was in the gun unit. And I thought the kid ran straight through the lobby, straight through the back door, through the front door. And I slide across this lobby because I see the kid in the lobby trying to find an open mailbox to hide the gun. He turns around with the gun, and we're like the old Wild West staring at each other. And, you know, because of my tactics and maybe that energy that you see, you know, in the body cam footage, you know, he believed me that I was going to do something if he didn't drop the weapon. And he did. Yeah. But certainly, you know, other times of family disputes, of course, everything else. So to have that label was really hurtful. And I was going to have to do 8.5 years of that 10 years, pretty much.
Right.
And I was never, you know, so that was a pretty tough pill to swallow to have that label.
So, Tom, you knew that Trump had promised if he got elected that he was going to pardon the January 6th people. And so you had to be hoping that that would take place, that Donald Trump would be the president for several reasons, but that one in particular. Tell me what you felt when he signed that pardon for all you guys.
Well, I never had a chance to witness it. And that day was, well, number one, I want to say thank you to President Trump and his family for having the courage to stand up to this machine. It's an evil machine. And him just announcing that he was going to run was enough for me to give me peace, to be honest with you, that he was going to stand up and fight for this country. That meant everything, whether or not he would have won or lost. That helped me so much. That we have a fighter for this country, not like these other Republicans in the Senate and Congress that are just collecting money and just manipulating people for votes. That was enough for me. Well, anyway, that day it was just dragging on and on and on. And I was like, can anybody just sign him this piece of paper to find out whether or not, you know, we can get the ball rolling, you know, cause it took a while.
Sure.
But I went to Dinner Chow, which was around 4:30. I went up to my unit. And still, I haven't heard anything. And then a guard yelled at me to go down to the LT's office, the lieutenant's office. And I was down there with another Marine, J6er. And very quickly, he said, okay, you got 10 minutes to pack your bags. You're no longer inmates. And I won't use the word, but he said, get the beep out of my prison. So ran upstairs, and the place was emotional. The guys in Texarkana, B unit, he gave me a nice little send off, and it was an emotional moment. Like I said, my views on, you know, before I had this, experience, you know, I was a lock them up and throw away the key kind of guy. And, you know, after this experience, I don't feel that way anymore. And I think the system is broken. I think these guys are getting sentenced way too much. And, I think it's more of just a money making machine than really trying to, you know, overwhelming. There's talk of numbers of the United States incarcerating more people than the rest of the world combined. That should be an indicator that we can have a real problem on our hands here. We should really try to fix things.
Yeah. Did you have
maybe more preventative stuff? And I think that comes in line with our faith and everything. And I really do feel like we can get back on track through our belief in God and Jesus Christ. And I think that's what keeps the family together. That's what keeps the father in family and gives us better direction and morals to live by.
Amen. Well, Thomas, we're about out of time, but I just want to thank you so much for being my guest today. And I appreciate your love of country and your commitment to be a patriot and stand up for what is right, even if it costs you a lot. And this did cost you a lot. And those that think you got off scot-free, I mean, you were incarcerated for, 2.5 years?
2.5 years, and as a former law enforcement officer, it wasn't easy. It took a while for the guys to warm up to me and get to know me and take a look at what really happened. And they didn't have to do what they did, but they did. I'll leave it at that. I'm very grateful for that and prayerful for them that, you know, see the light down the road too.
Amen, my brother. All right. Well, I appreciate you coming on. I appreciate you telling your story. And thank you for listening to Real Truth for Today. I'm Pastor Jeff Shreve. Go out, shine for Christ, and share what great things the Lord has done for you. And God will use you as his witness. God bless you.